The Lord be with you.
With your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Jesus said to his disciples, "Do not let your heart be troubled. Have faith in God and faith also in me. In my Father's house there are many dwelling places. If there are not, would I have told you that I was going to prepare a place for you? And if I go to prepare a place for you, I shall come back again and take you to myself, so that where I am, you also may be. And where I am going, you know the way." But Thomas said to him, "Master, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way?" Jesus said to him, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father except through me. If you know me, then you will also know my Father. From now on you know him, and you have seen him." But Philip said to him, "Master, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us." To him Jesus said, "Have I been with you all this time, Philip, and you still do not know me? Whoever has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, 'Show us the Father'? Do you not believe that I am in the Father, and the Father is in me? The words that I speak to you, I do not speak on my own. The Father who dwells in me is doing his works. Believe me that I am in the Father is in me. Or else believe because of the works themselves. And I say to you, whoever believes in me will do the works that I do, and will do greater ones than these, because I am going to the Father." The Gospel of the Lord. I'm going to lift one thought out of this pericope we have here from the Gospel of John. One thought for our reflection today, and wonder what it might mean to us in our journey of faith. Do not be afraid, Jesus says. In my Father's house, there are many dwelling places. I'd like to pause over that and reflect on what this means to us in our manner of prayer, in our understanding of God. If you look at the lexicon of Greek gods, you will find gods that are powerful, you will find gods of love, you will find gods who are vindictive, judgmental, punitive gods. A plentiful array of gods of every kind. You look at the Hindus have thousands of gods, but generally the Hindu gods are not punitive, because the Hindus follow the law of karma, which means you take responsibility for your life and you will account for the manner of your life after you die. Karen Armstrong, this extraordinary, brilliant woman who was once a nun. Interestingly, she was a member of the Society of the Holy Childhood, the Mayfield Nuns, when she was a religious. She left the order. She became an extraordinary author. And about 30 years ago, she wrote a mammoth volume on the history of God. And in this volume, She traces the history of God in the three great monotheistic traditions. First, the Jewish tradition, she pauses over chapter 34 in the book of Exodus, where God is revealed to Moses on Mount Sinai. A faithful God. A God of the covenant. A compassionate God, slow to anger, abounding in love and mercy. The God revealed in the Hebrew tradition, revealed to Moses on Mount Sinai. Looking at Islam, in the Quran there are 114 surahs. These are chapters. And each one begins with a bismillah, which is a blessing. And it's true in all 114 chapters except one. There's always an exception. And in a way, the exception emphasizes the presence of something in the other chapters. But each one begins with an invocation. They speak to a God who is the most merciful and most gracious. Their understanding of Allah, their God, most merciful and most gracious. And then we come to the Christian tradition. And we get to Jesus that says, do not be afraid. Why would you be afraid? In my Father's house, there are many dwelling places. And this is a teaching he gives to the 12, his followers, 12 which include Judas. Therefore, you wonder what happened to Judas. People ask me now and then, do you think that Judas made it to heaven? Well, if you go back and read Dante's Divine Comedy, you'll find Judas is in the ninth circle of hell. He's the lowest. He's gone forever. The deepest part of hell, says Dante. But that's 15th century theology. And if you look at recent scholarship dealing with the scriptures and Judas, we have a different understanding of him. His betrayal of Jesus was in order to test the power of Jesus. The Almighty Jesus, the Messianic Jesus, the Jesus who was going to save his people from the domination of the Roman Empire, the powerful Jesus. For that, he betrayed Jesus. And when it wasn't realized, overcome with grief and remorse for what he had done, he gave up, went back to the temple and threw back the money. And in total remorse, hopeless, he hanged himself. Why would we believe that the infinite love of God is not enough to understand him and to redeem him? If we believe in the infinite love of God, in Graham Greene's Power and the Glory, this extraordinary novel he has, set in Mexico during the Cristero War, 1926, 27, 28, where the church was persecuted by the government and all the priests fled. Otherwise, they will be executed. But there's one priest in the novel that says, that stays. He is not named. He's called the Whiskey Priest. And if you read the novel, you remember the Whiskey Priest. He was a broken man. By our standards, he was a failure as a priest. He had a mistress for a while. He fathered a child. There were a lot of things wrong with this man. But he was the only one, the only priest that stayed with the people during the persecution. He would not abandon his people. And in due time, he is arrested. He is sentenced to die. And the night before he dies, he cries, looking back over his life. In great remorse, he cries. And he cries because he's going to enter the presence of God empty-handed. Is the infinite love of God sufficient to accept his remorse and his sorrow for the dissipate life that he had? Sometimes I've thought maybe he's like the man on the cross, the criminal on the cross in the 23rd chapter of Luke's gospel. Remember the criminal who looks at Jesus and says, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus said to him, "This day, you criminal, this day you will be with me in paradise." So who is our God? And how do we experience and touch this God? This is a God that can only be experienced in failure. If we're perfect, we have earned the love of God. But it's the imperfect, it's the sinner, it's the one who struggles that experiences the benevolent, infinite, unearned love of God. In Romans, I mentioned these scripture things so that maybe you might remember these and use them as moments to pray. You know, when you're driving, you have a lot of downtime when you're driving. Just don't get involved with anything. Just reflect on the presence of God. And one of your reflections will be the fifth chapter of Romans, verse 8, where Paul says, "God shows us how much we are loved, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." Or reflect on the third chapter of John. "God so loved the world that all who believe in him will be saved." There's an interesting story told about St. Margaret Mary Alacoque in the 1700s at Paray-le-Monial in France, a mystical place. She is the one who had the revelations of the Sacred Heart, and she is the one that promoted the Sacred Heart. And she had a contemporary, St. Claude de la Colombière, a Jesuit. That's why the Jesuits have taken on a special devotion to the Sacred Heart. But the story is credibly told about this young nun, Sister Margaret Mary Alacoque, who was disturbing the convent because she had these visions of the Sacred Heart. And all the older, mature nuns said, "I don't know, there's something wrong here," and it caused a great disturbance in the monastery, the convent. So the bishop called Father Claude de la Colombière and said, "Would you go over and find out what's happening in this convent, which is very disturbed?" So he meets this young nun, Sister Margaret Mary, and he says, "Here's what I want you to do. When you have the vision of the Sacred Heart tomorrow and you're talking to Jesus, there is a sin that I have committed in my past, which I have confessed and for which I have been forgiven. I give you permission to ask what that sin was. And you come back and tell me my sin, then we'll know that your visions are authentic. Thus it was agreed. Sometime later, Claude comes back, says to Sister, "Did you have the vision of the Sacred Heart?" She said, "Yes, I did." "Did you ask him about the sin that belonged to me, which I confessed?" And she said, "I did." "And what did he say?" "He said he can't remember." Is this our God? Is there a mansion? Is there a dwelling place for everyone? The fact that God's infinite love could be so free, so generous, so benevolent, it's difficult to grasp. It's unbelievable. Nothing is free that much. I mean, the way we live and in our culture and in our lives, you have to earn everything. You have to pay your dues. How is it that we could have a God where you don't have to pay? You don't have to earn. It's free. That's unbelievable. It's only believable to the one who has faith. It's the great act of faith. I spoke about that a few weeks ago, about the first great act of faith is to accept acceptance. To accept the fact that in all our foolishness and our sinfulness and our brokenness, we are infinitely loved. So what are your chances when you get to the other side? I'm dealing with people all the time on their deathbed, fearful sometimes of what lies before them, trying to convince them that the God who embraces them now is a God of infinite love. And once that grasps you, it will change your life. You will be transformed. Now you will follow the God of infinite love. Now you will bless people. Now you will forgive. Now you will understand. Now you will listen to the struggles and the pains of others. That's what it means to be touched and to experience the infinite love of a God. So when you listen to Jesus, not from the Hebrew scriptures, not from the Quran, but the infinite love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, walk in peace. Feel secure. God is infinite love, and each and every one of us belong to the fullness of God. You know, where Thomas says, "Show us the Father," but Jesus says, "Once you have seen me, you have seen the fullness of God." And now, my people, we have seen the Lord, so we have seen the fullness of God's infinite love. Amen.